No, I can't do it. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Yeah, it is Samhain, or as you and I call it, Halloween. We acknowledge that this evening. Later on tonight, we are going to have a bit of writing from Bridget Wolf, one of our two ethical advisors, who also runs fairywoodland.com, fairywoodland.com. If you have never been to that website, whoa, are you in for a surprise? What else we got tonight, Catherine? We have we got to start the program with some very sad news, and this is personal as well as national, I guess you would say it. We lost somebody today, Studs Terkel, who, when I heard about it, really made me feel like the country. I don't know, something left from the United States today out of our collective consciousness. Studs Terkel was an incredible, incredible human being, broadcaster, activist, Pulitzer Prize winning author. He's the guy who, among other things, had the best-selling oral histories celebrating the so-called common folks. He was 96. His son said he died peacefully, no agony, and it was what he wanted. The Chicago, is it not Chicago Tribune, but I believe it's CAP, writes, he's an old rebel who never mellowed, never retired, never forgot, and never met a picket line or petition he didn't like. Terkel told the Associated Press about 5 years ago, quote, "A lot of people feel, what can I do? It's hopeless. Well, through all these years, there have been the people I'm talking about, whom we call activists, who give us hope, and through them, we have hope." End quote. You know, activist, like what Palin and McCain use as a curse word against Barack Obama. Terkel put out an oral history collection on race relations back in 1992. I remember reading this and just being blown away. It was called Race, How Blacks and Whites Think and Feel About the American Obsession. If you haven't read Terkel's book, Race, you should read it. And in 1995, the book Coming of Age, which was a collection of memories of men and women 70 years old and older, that also is stunning. Terkel had a way of getting people to say things, and when they were finished, they would listen to the tape that he had just made, and people would say, I didn't know I felt that way. He was amazing. In 2001, he wrote Will the Circle Be Unbroken? Reflections on Death, Rebirth, and Hunger for a Faith. And his 2003 book was Hope Dies Last, a book about hope. He was a 1985 Pulitzer Prize winner for the book The Good War, Remembrances of World War II, and it contrasted rich people and poor people along the same Chicago street, or he did in a later book called Division Street, America. Kathy and I, we used to travel across Chicago on Division Street, didn't we? One of my favorite books he wrote was called Working. He wrote it in 1974 when there weren't a lot of people working. I could go on and on. I'm sure most of you listening to this program know who Studs Terkel was. His politics were liberal, vintage FDR. He would never forget the New Deal programs from the Great Depression. And he also worried about this country suffering from what he called a national Alzheimer's disease that we couldn't remember. There was no collective memory. The older people were dying. There was no collective memory of how important those programs put together in the 30s that had been so bastardized by the Republicans and ignored by the Democrats, how important they were. And a lot of people don't know, but he graduated from the University of Chicago. He studied philosophy, and he picked up a law degree, but he decided not to go into law. In 1939, he married social worker Ida Goldberg, a marriage that lasted 60 years. She died right before we moved back to Chicago, remember, Kathy?
We'll never make it 60.
No, we won't. We won't. She said she could never get him to dance. She always called him Lewis, his given first name, not Studs. And Studs said of her, Ida was a far better person than I. That's the reality of it. She had a certain empathy I lack. And she was more politically active than I. Did she play a tremendous role in my life? Yeah, you could say so. End quote. When I worked in Chicago for 3.5 years at WLS, Studs started listening to the program. And he made contact through some folks. And the next thing I knew, I was honored to be able to call this man a friend. We used to talk on the phone. We used to do Bughouse Square reunions. If you're from Chicago, or you know what Bughouse Square is. We did that together, he and I. I was just blown away. Blown away. We had some friends visit in Chicago one time, both of whom were actors. And I said, guess what? I know Studs Terkel. And Robin was absolutely freaked out. She said, oh, my God, I've done some of his monologues in acting class. Can we meet him? Well, it just turned out that they were there on the day that we were doing one of the Bughouse Square commemorations. And I got to introduce Studs Terkel as a friend to my good friends from Atlanta. And, well, New York at the time. And I remember the day that word hit the Chicago Tribune that WLS and I were parting company. They didn't fire me. They tried to, and I almost took their asses to court and decided to have them buy out my contract and come back to Atlanta because it was very clear to me that WLS was just a nest of right-wingers in a city known for its liberalism. Amazing. But the day that little announcement, I guess it was the Sun-Times in Robert Feeder's column, I was home about 4:30 in the afternoon, and the phone rang. And I picked it up, and this is what I heard. The sons of bitches. The dirty sons of bitches. God damn it, Mike. What do you want me to do? And then I realized who it was. I just said, Studs, nothing. It's radio. You were in radio 50 years ago. You know, it doesn't mean anything. It means nothing. Ah, oh, the dirty sons of bitches, Mike. It was amazing. He was just amazing man. I didn't know him that well, and I don't mean to sound like I did. He kind of took us under his wing, Kathy and I, when we got there, and not in an everyday, let's get together for coffee kind of way, but always kind of hovering in the background. He used to listen to the program. It's through his writing, through his oral histories, through his books that I got to know this guy. And I've said on this program lots of times over the course of the past two decades, I believe that a hero ain't nothing but a sandwich. I don't have any heroes, except maybe one or two. And, okay, maybe two or three. And Studs Terkel is at the very top of my little tiny insignificant short list. I am going to miss knowing that he's here. I don't mean I'm going to miss phone calls with him. We haven't talked in 8 years. But I'm going to miss knowing that up in Chicago, in the apartment that he lived in with Ida, Studs Terkel is not there anymore. And I think that the whole country should pause just for half a second, quarter of a second, maybe one-tenth of a second, and just acknowledge that a great, great, great American has passed.
trade, we've got to see trade as opportunity, not as a scary thing.
No!
Yeah, try not to do that. You can really injure yourself when you do that. Oh, my God. Right before the program, I found this in my emails from Reg. She gives me a quotation from Marcus Aurelius. The subject line said, "Admonition to Republicans." And this is what one of the things Aurelius said, quote, "The object of life is not to be on the side of the majority, but to escape finding oneself in the ranks of the insane," end quote. Yes, sir. You bet. The infomercial, as it is being called, that Barack Obama put out the other night, pretty much gave television the hit that it needed. Did you see the numbers on this? It was a smashing ratings success. That's according to the TV writer, I believe, at the New York Times. It proved to be more popular than even the final game of the World Series and last season's finale of American Idol. The audience, it says here, for Obama's program far exceeded the expectations of television executives and many political pundits who had questioned whether Obama was engaging in overkill and buying half an hour on so many networks. No, he wasn't. You know, this is what comes from being a, dare I say it, a neighborhood organizer, you know? You know how to organize stuff. You really do. You know how to do it right. You don't do it like the old pimp and his hoe from Wasilla. You know, Barack Obama hangs out with terrorists, my friends. I'm going to cut your taxes. The 30-minute commercial played on 7 networks, broadcast and cable. It was seen by 33.5 million viewers. That's according to Nielsen. On the 3 broadcast networks that carried the special, the audience totaled more than 25 million, even surpassing the number for the last World Series game on Fox, which was 19 million. The special is also available on Univision and 3 cable networks, MSNBC, BET, and TV1. Les Moonves, the chairman of CBS, said, quote, "I was shocked by the number Obama was able to draw. It's just a stunning number," end quote. And it goes on and on and on. MSNBC normally has about 2.1 million viewers with Oberman. They drew 3.5 million viewers with the Obama program. NBC averages just under 7 million viewers. They pulled in almost 10 million for the half-hour special. BET, its average for Wednesday at 8 o'clock is 473,000 viewers. They had 714,000. And TV1 doubled their viewership almost. No, upped it by 50%. The only network with slightly lower totals, 2 of them, than average were Fox. Because on Wednesday at 8, they have that program Bones. And Univision, the Spanish language network, at that time of the night, they're offering telenovelas, you know, soap operas. And hard to compete with a soap opera. 33.5 million people. Now, of course, it ain't over till it's over. And like a lot of people who are hoping for an Obama win, it has to be big because the McCain pigs and the Republican pigs are doing everything they can to suppress the vote, alter the vote, change the vote, steal the vote. But as one who's supporting Obama in this go-around, and I am, willfully and with enthusiasm, even though I only agree with him about 50% of the time, I don't care this time. Sorry. I think it's imperative to state, for those of us who are supporting him, whether it's you or me, we talk to our friends and say, look, you know, supporting him and all the great polls and all the great speeches and all the early voting turnouts and the wonderful numbers on his half an hour infomercial, all of that means absolutely zero. It means nothing. The only thing that really matters is what happens on November 4th. So I am hoping against hope, because I've kind of seen this before, not like this, but similar expectations. The most classic I didn't see, but I remember my parents, they kept a copy, and that was the picture of Harry Truman holding up a copy of the New York Herald Tribune. One of the New York newspapers said, "Dewey wins," when Harry Truman won. But I personally have seen it before. Great expectations. There's a word. I think I made this word up, and I've only used it a couple of times on there. Antisappointment. And I hope we don't get caught, snagged, snared in antisappointment. And the way to guard against that is to vote. Just overwhelmingly vote. Right? To the point where the sons of bitches who try to suppress voting and destroy representative government can't win.
A vice president has a really great job. They're in charge of the United States Senate. So if they want to, they can really get in there with the senators and make a lot of good policy changes that will make life better for Brandon and his family and his classroom.
She is so stupid. It's scary. Speaking of the hoe from Wasilla, the Times is reporting that a growing number of voters have concluded that Palin is just not qualified to be vice president. Really? Boy, that didn't take long. How long has it been, Kathy? 3 months? Which, according to the Times, is weighing down the Republican ticket in the last days of the campaign. That's according to the latest New York Times CBS News poll. According to that poll, 59% of voters surveyed said Palin was not prepared for the job. Now, that's up 9 percentage points since the beginning of the month. 59%. Does that mean 41% think she is qualified? Oh, my God. Nearly a third of the voters polled said the vice presidential selection would be a major factor influencing their vote for president. Well, I'll tell you something. When we were standing online the other day to vote, I didn't strike up any conversations with anybody. It was too damn cold, and I was just, you know, drinking my coffee, standing in line. Oh, and reading, you know, reading the paper. And but I heard conversations that were coming from probably 99% of the people in the line we were in were white. Now, that does mean something. It really does in Georgia, trust me. And it was a long line. But I'm not suggesting that everybody there was voting for McCain. As a matter of fact, quite the opposite. I think most of the white people in that line were going to vote for Obama. Because where we went to vote in Decatur, Georgia, these are not stupid people. It is part of the Emory University community, part of the Agnes Scott College community. It's a very progressive little city within a city. It's, you know, part of Metro Atlanta, but it's anyway. The conversations I overheard from people who were sotto voce identifying themselves as Republicans. Well, I don't think Obama is really a liberal. I think he's more of a middle of the roader. I think he's even got some conservative ideas. Oh, yeah. You know, most black people are conservative. Oh, I know. I'm I think I'm going to have to vote for Obama this time. You know, my husband and I were talking about this, and you know, we've got children. We believe in certain things, but the Republicans have just, I don't know. We're pretty much going to, that's it. We're going to vote for Obama. Now, variations on that theme, you were able to hear, one was able to hear, if one was tuned in to listening to people waiting online, as we were. You had the usual Democrats who were just kind of kicking back and guffawing and waiting for the line to move forward so they could vote for Barack Obama and Joe Biden, Joe the Biden. So I think the selection of Sarah Palin, among other things, I think what it did was destroy any sense that thinking people might have had, Democrat or Republican or independent, that John McCain would surround himself with competent people. I mean, this is the second highest office in the country. It is the president in waiting. It is the person. Can you imagine if John McCain had to go under the ether for a while to have more of that homunculus removed from his face? Who would be in charge? Sarah Palin is a trigger-happy Christer. She wants death and destruction because her belief system is that the more death and destruction, the more Jesus will be happy and the nearer we all will come to the rapture. You know, nearer, my God, to thee. And Palin, as acting president for even 30 seconds, would be highly risky thing to happen in the United States. So, and I think most people who have at least a high school education are aware of that. She's not qualified to do anything except maybe be the mayor of Wasilla. That's good. Go back there and do that. Go back there and do that. But I think a lot of people have come to the conclusion that McCain is not trustworthy where it concerns what sort of people. You know, he would put Lieberman in as some, what, Secretary of State? Holy Christ. If Lieberman were ever made Secretary of State, it would make us pine for the days when we had Condoleezza Rice. Please bring Condi back! Lieberman would have us in a nuclear war probably within 6 months.
Well, I didn't want to go to war, but, you know, Hadassah said, you know, those goddamn Palestinians are up to it again. And, you know, I don't know. I tried to tell John, you know, maybe just a quick surgical strike, but you know, John and Hadassah, oh, God, you know, they want nukes. So, yeah, you know, what are you going to do? Eh?
Who else would he would surround himself with these kinds of nutballs? But how do you know that? Look who he picked to be a heartbeat away from the presidency. A jerk, a complete loon.
And in a possible indication that the choice of Ms. Palin has hurt McCain's image, voters said they had much more confidence in Obama's pick than they did in McCain's.
12% of the voters already surveyed said they had already voted. It's still going on down here. There has been a request by several members of Congress to keep the early voting open Saturday and Sunday and Monday here in Georgia. And the Secretary of State, Karen Handel, who is a Republican, has refused. She says,
well, why should we do that? You know, just because some congressman requests something, we have laws.
Now, see, Karen Handel, Secretary of State, can issue an order, as has happened in North Carolina and Florida, to keep the state, the polling places open.
Well, you know, if the voting lines are long, if people are worried about that, well, that's because the county registrars aren't doing their jobs right.
You see? Karen Handel used to be a county commissioner here, just a right-wing nut, and now she's Secretary of State. So a simple request by members of Congress from the Georgia delegation to keep the polls open, because the lines today, where Kathy and I went to vote day before yesterday, took us an hour and 10 minutes, the reports today coming from that same polling place now, the lines are four and a half hours long.
And these are white people. This is a nice, you know, a nice kind of white neighborhood. It's not where, it's not minority. It's not where there's not enough voting machines, you know, like they do to the minorities. I walked in the voting when we finally got through the line. There must have been what in there, Kathy? 50 machines? But Karen Handel, when requested,
well, if the lines are long, it's because the registrars aren't handling things right. Sorry. We have state laws, you know.
Yeah, we all know that. We also know that those state laws can be, where it designates hours of voting, can be suspended by a simple flourish of her ballpoint pen. But why do that? Because the Democrats are the ones, you know, McCain and Palin support. Republicans are not turning out except to vote for Barack Obama. Nobody's turning out to vote for McCain and Palin. Well, I don't mean nobody, of course. There'll be millions of people vote for McCain and Palin. But why let the hundreds of thousands of people vote here in Georgia who don't want any more Republican nonsense, criminality? The primary function of Republican office holders on any level in this country is to suppress the vote anytime there is an election. And the reason is because Republicans know in their guts, in their sex organs, in their heads, in their feet, that they cannot govern, that it's a party of death and destruction, and that America would throw them out on their asses as a group if the votes were all counted. And that new voters don't register Republican. Okay, a few do. The vast majority registers Democratic. Because we have seen now, over 25 years, what these degenerate bastards are about, going all the way back to Reagan. Look at the last 25 years. When has the country advanced economically, socially, on any level? It has not been when Republicans were in charge. Everyone knows this, especially the Republicans. So suppress the vote any way you can. You pigs. The day is coming. The day is coming. 89% of people, according to this poll, view the economy in a negative sense. And 85% think the country's on the right, on the wrong track. 85% of Americans think we're headed the wrong directions. Direction. My question is, why do 15% think everything's okay? Who are these people? Where do they live? I'd like to move there. The interesting thing, perceptions about race are changing because of Obama's candidacy. Nearly two-thirds of those polled said whites and blacks have an equal chance of getting ahead in today's society. That's up from 50%. It's almost 67% now, back in July. All of a sudden, white people are starting to realize, Barack Obama, maybe I should vote for him. It's about 10 before the hour. It is Samhain, Halloween. Here we are. We took Molly trick-or-treating tonight, and it was a lot of fun. She went with a lot of the kids from her preschool at where she goes to school. I almost had the name of it. No.
No, because we're the godless atheists.
We're the godless atheists, right. But it is Samhain, and a little bit later on the program tonight, we'll have a reading from something that
Bridget at fairywoodland.com has written about this Wiccan holiday. Fairywoodland.com if you haven't been there. David sent this to me a couple nights ago. He says, do you remember Cassie from Austin, whose brother, her soul guardian, was almost deployed to Iraq a little over 2 years ago? Yeah, I remember that. Remember that, Kathy? The girl that called here, I forget the exact circumstances of why her brother was her guardian.
I think her parents, one of her parents was dead and the other one was in jail.
I think that's what it was, right. And she was 15 at the time, and she and her brother was in the Army, and he had requested a hardship deferment, or whatever you call it these days, so he could take care of his sister. Cassie, had they not given him this redeployment to stay in the States, Cassie would have been forced into foster care. Remember that? And I don't think, you know, people want to go into foster care in Texas. Well, actually, nowhere in the United States, because it's a system. I'm not downing foster parents. I know there are a lot of wonderful foster parents out there who really do a good job. I'm talking about the system. The system, no matter how good the foster parents are, the systems in most of these states where it concerns temporary custody of children is horrifying. Anyway, tomorrow Cassie turns 17, and she recently made the National Honor Roll as a high school junior. David writes, I told her she should call your show or email to update you on your life, but she thinks you'd probably not even remember her. Oh, please. Cassie.
She had a blog. We used to read her blog.
Yeah. I mean, Cassie, of course I remember you. And then David writes, when I wish her a happy birthday on Friday's show, I'll tell her to listen for it if you think it's appropriate to do birthday shout-outs like that. For someone like Cassie, absolutely. Oh, my God. Do we remember this young woman? Oh, I remember until that was straightened out, she had a couple of members of Congress go to bat for her, I forget exactly how it turned out. I don't remember the particulars of how her brother got redeployed to stay in the States, but I do remember the night she called when she was a very upset young girl, right on the cusp of, not a girl, not a woman, right there on the cusp. And, I don't remember what her reason was that she called our program. I think Cassie wasn't she one of the kids that used to listen?
I think she called in on a kids' night, and it started out just, the topic was just about Iraq, and she was just talking about her brother being in Iraq, and then she got more into her story about how, you know, he was home with her now, and he was going to have to go back, and it was terrifying for her because she was going to then have to go into foster care.
Right, right. Well, anyway, Cassie, if you are listening, or anyone out there who knows Cassie, happy birthday, sweetheart. We absolutely remember you. And congratulations on making the National Honor Society. I think that's what David's referring to here, the National Honor Roll. He has it, but I think he means National Honor Society, right? Congratulations, Cassie, on both events, your 17th birthday, and the award for your academic excellence. And good luck. Absolutely good luck. Stay in touch. You know, email in once in a while if you're listening to this. Love to hear from you. Or call in. Hell, you know. I'm still around. 17. I think most of us of a certain age do remember 17. I remember 17. It won't be too long before Molly will be 17. I remember when my other kids were 17. That's when Chris took off and backpacked across New Zealand. New Zealand. Where are you going, Chris? New Zealand, Pop. Where?
All right. We have a break coming, and when we come back, some more items here that we would like to cover tonight, and then we're going to get your phone calls. Also, at the bottom of the next hour will be the reading that I do every year of The Telltale Heart, Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart. If you've not heard that before, stick around, especially if you're Republican, because it's pretty scary, and it might, you know, it might, oh no, don't even bother saying it. And then at some point this evening, Bridget Wolfe's Ode to Samhain here. This is Halloween, or Samhain, for people who practice the old religion or the Wiccan faith. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is Halloween, or Samhain. The Malloy Program on Nova M Radio. If you were not tuned in last hour, you did not hear us mention the fact, I'm sure you probably already know it anyway, the fact of Studs Terkel's passing, his death at the age of 96. And I've just gotten a not an avalanche of emails, but quite a few here of people who are familiar with his work and to whom his what he was about meant something. He did have that ability to make you feel like when you were talking with him or standing around with him or hanging out as Kathy and I did with him, you briefly you got the opinion. Or the feeling, the sense, that as far as Terkel was concerned, you were the only person on earth. He wanted to hear what you had to say. And he wanted you to listen to what he had to say, too. He was a great talker. Oh, my God, he could talk, this guy. Email here from Jan in Wisconsin. It writes, Mike, growing up, I read Chicago newspapers and Chicago authors since I lived less than 60 miles away. Thus did I fall in love with Mike Royko, Studs Terkel, and Nelson Algren. Excuse me. Mike Royko, of course, was columnist for the, was it Sun-Times or the Tribune? Sun-Times? Famous writer. Royko died about a year after we got there, didn't he? And Nelson Algren, writer, poet, he wrote The Man with the Golden Arm, among other books. We got to know one of his biographer real well when we were there, who also has passed away, another older gentleman. Anyway, Jan writes, their gravelly voiced interpretations of the life of Chicago and the lives of Chicago people inspired me to think I might write something of value one day. They were tough men who wrote about tough times and tough politics, yet they could reach out with words and touch the pulse of a neighborhood or a political machine or a man with his lunch pail, stumbling home bone-tired from the factory or slaughterhouse at the end of the long workday. Their gruff realism was interlaced with compassion and anger and love. I called into a radio program one time when Studs was being interviewed to tell him about the impact of the book Working on my psyche. I wanted to ask him about the musical play of the same name that was adapted from his book. I wanted to know who he thought did the best character interpretation. He spoke in his usual manner, which was that of someone having a conversation with a friend.
I felt as if he were genuinely glad to hear from me, a complete stranger. I told him I thought he was as great an American writer as John Steinbeck, and you could hear him beaming over the airwaves as he replied, "That's a very nice thing to say. Thank you." That was a brief and distant encounter with Studs, but it stays with me to this day. I'm sure that if there is an afterlife, he's somehow listening, nodding his head and beaming. Jan. Yeah, I'm a little bit more upset, Kathy, than I'm letting on here. I mean, I know that a person lives 96 years and does all the things that Studs Terkel did. You know, maybe a celebration rather than a mourning is appropriate, but whew, I don't know. All right, where are we? Well, I've lost my place. I've completely lost my place, Kathy. All right, I'll tell you what. Let's do... it is Halloween or Samhain. Bridget writes, "Welcome to the fires of the new year and the three nights of summer's end. Samhain marks the end of the old and the beginning of the new, linking us with the world of spirit as the turning of the year. At the turning of the year, October 31st, when we celebrate Halloween, is the last night of the old year. November 2nd is the first night of the new year, and the night of September 1st is the night between that belongs to no time. Our modern Halloween stems from the Celtic Samhain. It is the sacred time when the veil between the world and the other world is so thin that the dead can walk with us and warm themselves at our hearths. It is also the time when some mortals, especially shamans and poets, are able to find entrance to the other world through special doorways that open only at Samhain. This is a time of transformation from summer to winter, from the time of growth and bounty above ground to the time of storing the harvest in the root cellar below ground. Although the seasons in fairyland are not quite so pronounced, nature in the other world follows the cycles of life as well, so the process of moving from outside to inside, from exuberant growth to nurturing dreams, affects the fairy's way of life just as it does ours. There are many choices that need to be made at this time of transition from endings to beginnings. For us in the modern mortal world, the decisions are often metaphorical, but there are important realities behind the metaphors. Of the crops that you have grown this past year, which do you want to put in the root cellar to feed yourself and your family through the winter, and which do you want to save as seed to plant in the spring? Of the animals birthed last spring, which can you afford to feed through the winter and use to breed for next year, and which ones will feed and clothe you and your family through the cold time? As we see the fields of dead corn stalks waiting for harvest, or the brilliant colors of leaves in the last moments before becoming compost, the turning of the year and the movement from life to death is unmistakable. That the dying leaves should grace us with such beauty has always struck me as a fairy thing. There are many rituals from around the world to mark this time and to honor the energy it brings to our lives. The rituals we know and suggest to you all center around endings and beginnings and acknowledging the possibility of the existence of a world beyond our usual awareness. So on these three nights of summer's end, set a place at the table for your ancestors who want to visit. Leave food outside your door for other spirits so that they might bless your home for the coming year. Make a bonfire outside. Throw into it everything you want to clean out of your life from the year past. And in the morning, bring coals inside to start your hearth fire for the new year. If you have nowhere to make a fire, turn off all the lights in the house, light a candle, and use the flame to burn small scraps of paper on which you've written what you want to dispose of. In the morning, light a candle to welcome the new year and keep you warm through the coming winter. With all the veil between the worlds so thin, it's a great time for divination, so take out runes or tarot cards. As you or your children walk the street in costumes, remember that the real spirits and the fairy are walking with you." Thank you. just listen to music like this for the rest of the program. You want to? No? Thanks to Bridget Wolf, who writes about all things fairy and follows through at she and her husband's website. If you have not been there, you need to go. I'm telling you, it'll do magic things to you. Fairywoodland.com. Fairywoodland.com. We have a break coming. I think when we come back, what do we got? Do we have some exciting sound to play for our listeners this evening? We do. What do we have? Well, let it be a surprise.
Some surprising sound about what McCain's very own are saying about him.
Oh yeah, and do you have the Eagleburger thing? Lawrence Eagleburger, who was briefly Secretary of State for George Herbert Walker Bush and has worked for several Democrat and Republican presidents, made some comments about Sarah Palin's inability to be vice president or be anything yesterday. And apparently overnight, the right-wingers got a hold of him and beat him about the head and shoulders. And today he issued an entirely different statement. So we have both of them for you. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Riding on our range, then the cowboy change your ways. They are with us, you will ride. Trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies. Yippee-yi-yo.
Found a fiend in Mike Malloy.
A fiend? Don't you mean friend? 21 past the hour. All right, Lawrence Eagleburger, who has had an interesting career to say the least. He has served a number of different presidents. George Herbert Walker Bush. He was briefly Secretary of State under Bush, and he served in lesser capacities under Nixon, Carter, Reagan, and a couple other jobs under Herbert Bush. But here he is yesterday talking about Sarah Palin on NPR.
And Craig, thanks very much for the call. You mentioned, obviously, experience. Are you entirely comfortable with Sarah Palin as the Vice President of the United States, that she would be ready to take over in a crisis if she should terribly be called upon to do so?
It's a very good question. I'm being facetious here. Look, I don't think at the moment she is prepared to take over the reins of the presidency.
Oh, really? Well, what did he say there at the very beginning? He said, I'm being facetious here. When he said, what was that first part? Do you remember, Kathy?
He said, well, that's a very good question.
Very good question. He said, I'm being facetious here. I think he's been in the cooking, Sherry, too. All right, now that was yesterday. Here's today.
His qualifications. Take a listen.
His quote was, give her some time in the office, and I think she will be adequate. I can't say that she would be a genius in the job. Now, this is one of your staunchest supporters saying this.
I love Larry Eagleburger. Larry has never had a chance to meet Sarah. Look, I am excited that she has ignited people across America.
Well, was Secretary Eagleburger taken out of context? He joins me now. That is the question, Mr. Secretary. Did you or did you not say that Sarah Palin is not quite ready for the vice president spot?
you know, you are witnessing something quite unique. A man who's about to talk to you while he has his foot in his mouth. I made a serious mistake yesterday. I was quoted correctly. I wasn't thinking when I said it. In fact, I was discussing foreign policy, and this was in that context, and I was just plain stupid. And if I have given the flim-flam artist Barack Obama some success with this, I am deeply apologetic. I did not intend it. In fact, if you look at this carefully, on the question of experience, for example, Sarah Palin has been a governor. She has executive ability. She knows energy issues. Now, you tell me what Barack Obama has ever done in the way of executive business, doing anything in the executive field. He's been in the Senate for some 2 years and been there half the time and seldom votes on issues. I'm sorry. I made a terrible mistake.
Oh, you son of a bitch. You made a terrible mistake when you opened your mouth. How dare you, Eagleburger? What did they do to you overnight? Waterboard you? Huh? Christopher Hitchens was only able to stand it for 17 seconds. How long did an old fart like you, how long were you able to take it, huh? With all those rolls around your neck, it must have not taken too long for you to go, I'll say it. You evil son of a bitch, all of you people, all of you Republican office holders, once in future, you're really disgusting. You really hate this country. You hate everything about this country. There's Eagleburger in a candid moment. I mean, regardless of what he is, he's not stupid. He's a right-wing nutball, and he has to come out with a gratuitous slam against Barack Obama because he got caught telling the truth. As he sees it and feels it about Sarah Palin. That's what he did. He told the truth. No, she's not qualified. Jesus Christ, is the woman who takes your laundry down at the dry cleaners, is she qualified? Might be a nice, wonderful woman, a good Christian. Maybe she's got a degree in English and normally teaches school. And just working in the laundromat because, I don't know, there's no budget left. But is she qualified to be Vice President, President of the United States? Well, hell no! There's Larry Eagleburger, who has sat down with kings, dictators, potentates, those elected and not elected, traveled around the world, forced into a little tiny box with little tiny bars on it where he has to lie through his large ass the day after he tells the truth. How pathetic. How pathetic these lions of the Republican Party have turned out to be. Pathetic. You're something quite unique here. You don't use a modifier with the word unique, Larry. Quite unique here. You're going to hear someone talking with his foot in his mouth, which is difficult because I've got a couple of goddamn wine bottles in there, too. But I'm going to talk with my foot in my mouth. Now, Sarah Palin will make excellent whatever it is she's going to do. I don't know.
Stop this little game that you are playing. I'm gonna tell you all what my heart's been dying to be saying. Just like a ghost, you've been a haunting my dreams. Now I'll propose on Halloween. Love is kinda crazy with the spooky little girl like you.
Do you agree with the Bush Doctrine?
In what respect, Charlie?
The Bush... Well, what do you interpret it to be?
His worldview.
Twenty-five and a half before the hour. All right, as promised, we do this every year on Samhain. Edgar Allan Poe, one of the greatest of American writers, right up there with Studs Terkel. The Telltale Heart, my interpretation.
True. Nervous. Very, very dreadfully nervous I had been, and am, but why will you say that I am mad? The disease had sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them. Above all was the sense of hearing acute. I heard all things in the heaven and in the earth. I heard many things in hell. How then am I mad? Hearken and observe how healthily, how calmly I can tell you the whole story. It is impossible to say how first the idea entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object there was none. Passion there was none. I loved the old man. He had never wronged me. He had never given me insult. For his gold I had no desire. I think it was his eye. Yes, it was this. He had the eye of a vulture, a pale blue eye with a film over it. Whenever it fell upon me, my blood ran cold, and so by degrees, very gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old man and thus rid myself of the eye forever. Now this is the point. You fancy me mad. Madmen know nothing, but you should have seen me. You should have seen how wisely I proceeded, with what caution, with what foresight, with what dissimulation. I went to work. I was never kinder to the old man than during the week before I killed him. And every night, about midnight, I turned the latch of his door and opened it, oh so gently, and then, when I had made an opening sufficient for my head, I put in a dark lantern, all closed, closed, that no light shone out, and then I thrust in my head. Oh, you would have laughed to see how cunningly I thrust it in. I moved it slowly, very, very slowly, so that I might not disturb the old man's sleep. It took me an hour to place my whole head within the opening so far that I could see him as he lay upon his bed. Ha! Would a madman have been so wise as this? And then, when my head was well in the room, I undid the lantern cautiously, oh so cautiously, cautiously, where the hinges creaked. I undid it just so much that a single thin ray fell upon the vulture eye. And this I did for 7 long nights, every night just at midnight. But I found the eye always closed, and so it was impossible to do the work, for it was not the old man who vexed me, but his evil eye. And every morning when the day broke, I went boldly into the chamber and spoke courageously to him, calling him by name in a hearty tone and inquiring how he had passed the night. So you see, he would have been a very profound old man indeed to suspect that every night, just at 12, I looked in upon him while he slept. Upon the 8th night, I was more than usually cautious in opening the door. A watch's minute hand moved more quickly than did mine. Never before that night had I felt the extent of my own powers, of my sagacity. I could barely contain my feelings of triumph. To think that there I was, opening the door little by little, and he not even to dream of my secret deeds or thoughts. I fairly chuckled at the idea. And perhaps he heard me, for he moved on the bed suddenly, as if startled. Now, you may think that I drew back, but no, his room was as black as pitch, with the thick darkness, for the shutters were close fastened through fear of robbers. And so I knew that he could not see the opening of the door, and I kept pushing it on steadily, steadily. I had my head in, and was about to open the lantern when my thumb slipped upon the tin fastening, and the old man sprang up in bed, crying out, "Who's there?" I kept quiet and still and said nothing. For a whole hour I did not move a muscle, and in the meantime I did not hear him lie down. He was still sitting up in the bed, listening, just as I have done night after night, hearkening to the death watches in the wall. Presently I heard a slight groan, and I knew it was the groan of mortal terror. It was not a groan of pain or of grief. Oh, no, it was the low, stifled sound that arises from the bottom of the soul. When overcharged with awe, I knew the sound well. Many a night, just at midnight, when all the world slept, it has welled up from my own bosom, deepening with its dreadful echo the terrors that distracted me. I say I knew it well. I knew what the old man felt. I pitied him, although I chuckled at heart. I knew that he had been lying awake ever since the first slight noise, when he had turned in the bed. His fears had been ever since growing upon him. He had been trying to fancy them causeless, but could not. He had been saying to himself, "It is nothing but the wind in the chimney. It is only a mouse crossing the floor," or "It is merely a cricket which has made a single chirp." Yes, he had been trying to comfort himself with these suppositions, but he had found all in vain. All in vain, because death, in approaching him, had stalked with his black shadow before him and enveloped the victim. And it was the mournful influence of the unperceived shadow that caused him to feel, although he never saw nor heard, to feel the presence of my head within the room. When I had waited a long time, very patiently, without hearing him lie down, I resolved to open a little, a very, very little crevice in the lantern. So I opened it. You cannot imagine how stealthily, stealthily, until at length a simple dim ray, like the thread of a spider, shot from out the crevice and fell full upon the vulture eye. It was open, wide, wide open. And I grew furious as I gazed upon it. I saw it with perfect distinctness, all a dull blue with a hideous veil over it that chilled the very marrow in my bones. But I could see nothing else of the old man's face or person, for I had directed the ray as if by instinct precisely upon the damned spot. And have I not told you that what you mistake for madness is but over-acuteness of the sense? Now, I say, there came to my ears a dull, low, quick sound, such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I knew that sound well. It was the beating of the old man's heart. It increased my fury as the beating of a drum stimulates the soldier on to courage. But even yet I refrained and kept still. I scarcely breathed. I held the lantern motionless. I tried how steadily I could to maintain the ray upon the eye. Meantime, the hellish tattoo of the heart increased. It grew quicker and quicker and louder every instant. The old man's terror must have been extreme. It grew louder, I say, louder every moment. Do you mark me well? I have told you that I am nervous, so I am. And now, at the dead hour of the night, amid the dreadful silence of that old house, so strange a noise as this excited me to uncontrollable terror. Yet for some minutes longer I refrained and stood still, but the beating grew louder, louder. I thought the heart must burst, and now a new anxiety seized me. The sound would be heard by a neighbor. The old man's hour had come. With a loud yell, I threw open the lantern and leaped into the room. He shrieked once only. In an instant I dragged him to the floor and pulled the heavy bed over him. And smiled gaily to find the deed so far done. But for many minutes the heart beat on with a muffled sound. This, however, did not vex me. It would not be heard through the wall. At length it ceased. The old man was dead. I removed the bed and examined the corpse. Yes, he was stone dead. I placed my hand upon the heart and held it there many minutes. There was no pulsation. He was stone dead. His eye would trouble me no longer. If still you think me mad, you will think so no longer when I describe the wise precautions I took for the concealment of the body. The night waned, and I worked hastily, but in silence. First of all, I dismembered the corpse. I cut off the head and the arms and the legs. I then took up three planks from the flooring of the chamber and deposited all between the scantlings. I then replaced the boards so cleverly, so cunningly, that no human eye, not even his, could have detected anything wrong. There was nothing to wash out, no stain of any kind, no blood spot whatever. I had been too wary for that. A tub had caught all. When I had made an end of these labors, it was 4 o'clock, still dark as midnight. As the bell sounded the hour, there came a knocking at the street door. I went down to open it with a light heart, for what had I now to fear? There entered three men who introduced themselves with perfect suavity as officers of the police. A shriek had been heard by a neighbor during the night. Suspicion of foul play had been aroused. Information had been lodged at the police office, and they, the officers, had been deputed to search the premises.
I smiled, for what had I to fear? I bade the gentleman welcome. The shriek, I said, was my own in a dream. The old man, I mentioned, was absent in the country. I took my visitors all over the house. I bade them search, search well. I led them at length to his chamber. I showed him his treasure, secure, undisturbed. In the enthusiasm of my confidence, I brought chairs into the room and desired them here to rest from their fatigues, while I myself, in the wild audacity of my perfect triumph, placed my own seat upon the very spot beneath which reposed the corpse of the victim. The officers were satisfied. My manner had convinced them. I was singularly at ease. They sat, and while I answered cheerily, they chatted of familiar things. But ere long I felt myself getting pale and wished them gone. My head ached, and I fancied a ringing in my ears. But still they sat, and still chatted. The ringing became more distinct. It continued and became more distinct. I talked more freely to get rid of the feeling, but it continued and gained definiteness until at length I found that the noise was not within my ears. No doubt I now grew very pale, but I talked more fluently and with a heightened voice. Yet the sound increased, and what could I do? It was a low, dull, quick sound, much like a sound as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I gasped for breath, and yet the officers heard it not. I talked more quickly, more vehemently, but the noise steadily increased. I arose and argued about trifles in a high key and with violent gesticulations, but the noise steadily increased. Why would they not be gone? I paced the floor to and fro with heavy strides, as if excited to fury by the observations of the men, but the noise steadily increased. Oh, God, what could I do? I foamed, I raved, I swore. I swung the chair upon which I had been sitting and grated it upon the boards. But the noise arose over all and continually increased. It grew louder, 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 and still the men chatted pleasantly and smiled. Was it possible they heard not? Almighty God, no! No, they heard. They suspected. They knew. They were making a mockery of my horror. This I thought, and this I think. But anything else, anything was better than this agony. Anything was more tolerable than this derision. I could bear those hypocritical smiles no longer. I felt that I must scream or die. And now, again, hark, louder, 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 louder. Villains, I shrieked, dissemble no more. I admit the deed. Tear up the planks. Here, here. It is the beating of his hideous heart!
That always scares me, too.
Powerful nation, Russia, because they are right there. They are right next to our state.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It's about 7 before the hour. Ron in Broward, New York, writes in about the Larry Eagleburg about-face. Mike, faced with the prospect of being taken off the B-list of D.C. party guests, cowardly Larry Eagleburger groveled and tried to take back his words. The open bar martinis and the free Swedish meatballs once again win the day. Yeah, they must have really really threatened to pull Eagleburger's Flying Monkey Right card right out of his wallet. Now get out there and change it, what you said about the hoe, damn it. What else? I'll tell you what, we only have a couple minutes to the break. Let's go to Matthew, who's calling from Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew.
Good evening.
How you doing? Happy Halloween.
Oh, well, actually, we haven't been really celebrating Halloween too much, but the Gaelic holiday we kind of observe in respectful silence.
Wait a minute. You mean you didn't go trick-or-treating tonight?
Well, I don't think a 19-year-old is really allowed to walk up to people's doors and threaten them for candy, but I can try. I mean,
no, that's all right. No, you don't have to do it, Matthew. That's right. I'd trick-or-treat until I was 42.
Well, that's lucky you. Free candy is free candy.
Yeah, you're damn right. You're damn right. And don't give me any of those, sour balls. I want all Hershey's stuff, right?
Anything with chocolate, yeah.
There you go.
Definitely.
Now, the real reason you called.
Well, actually, I wanted to tell you a quick story about a weird tradition in our family for Halloween that really we don't know the origin of it. We've always known this and done this ever since, you know, mm-hmm. many generations ago. And we did this tonight. What we do is we stand in our front yard and, you know, right way after the sun sets,
mm-hmm.
and we look to the sky, and if it's a clear sky and we can see the moon, and we always look for the black bird that crosses the sky, and we always look for this. And interestingly enough, you know, it could be a cloudy day. Some years it shows up, some years it doesn't. We kind of consider it a good omen.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, you know, we were just kind of casually looking, and I had actually looked away, and then I hear my mom say, there it is, and there's this big black bird just flying through the sky, and we thought, you know what, that's got to be good news. So that's a quick insight into our tradition.
Wait a second. You're standing out there with your family on Halloween, and mm-hmm. you see a huge black bird flying, and you consider that to be a good omen?
Yes.
That would scare the hell out of me, Matthew. I would run inside and grab, oh, I hate to say it, but I'd run inside and, you know, maybe get a 12-gauge, maybe a 16-gauge to give it a running start, and try to shoot the son of a bitch down, frankly. A black bird at night? You know what happens when a black bird flies at night?
Well, I know it's strange, but actually the last time we saw it, my dad won the lottery.
So. Oh! Well, then, I've always believed in blackbirds as being good omens. Yes, indeedy. No, that's a good story. That's a good story. We had black nightbirds in Toledo, Ohio. They're called, I don't know what their real name was. We called them nighthawks. And
those were bats.
No, those were birds. We had bats, too. But finished with the story?
I was actually wanting to also note real quick just some interesting things.
15 seconds.
Okay, since I've been back in America,
mm-hmm.
it's just so disorienting. Coming from a country where about 92% of the populace was pretty progressive-minded
mm-hmm.
to a state where about 92% of the populace looks like they could have been stuck in the Paleolithic era.
I hear you, Matthew. Listen, pal, we got to go. Matthew, stay in touch. Thanks. I love your story. I really do. The big black bird. I love it.
You know, I can see the moon from my house in Wasilla.
Yeah?
That makes me an astronaut.
It sure does. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us, y'all. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Happy Halloween. I like the song. I like the movement. And, you know, what is a Halloween without a bit of Wagner? It is 7 past the hour. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. We'll come back to your phone calls in just a second. This is being reported all over the web. Huffington, ABC News, Glenn Greenwald at Salon. There was a Palin sat for one of these phony conservative radio or television interviews this morning. And during the interview, she said she fears that her First Amendment rights may be threatened by attacks, her word, from reporters who have the temerity to suggest she is engaging in a negative campaign against Barack Obama. She's afraid of these attacks by the media, by reporters, maybe violating her First Amendment rights. Palin told WMAL-AM that her criticism of Obama's associates like Ayers and Jeremiah Wright should not be considered negative attacks. That's right. Rather, for reporters or columnists to suggest that it's going negative may constitute an attack that threatens a candidate's free speech under the Constitution, Palin said. For reporters to suggest that it's going negative, that may be an attack against a governor, a senator, a president, threatening their free speech rights under the Constitution. She went on to say, if the media convince enough voters that that is negative campaigning for me to call Barack Obama out on his associations, then I don't know what the future of our country would be in terms of First Amendment rights and our ability to ask questions without fear of attacks by the mainstream media, end quote. Has this psychopathic bitch got it? I mean, does she have everything asked backwards? Sarah, one thing the First Amendment does actually guarantee is a free press, whether it exists or not. It's guaranteed. Thus, when the press criticizes a political candidate or a governor or a senator or a president, that is an example of First Amendment rights being used, not being withheld or abridged. Sarah, you've got it asked backwards, you dumbass. You think that when the press challenges you, they're violating the First Amendment? Oh, my God. As Glenn Greenwald writes, this isn't only about profound ignorance regarding our basic liberties, though it's obviously that. Palin here is also giving voice to the standard right-wing grievance instinct that it's inherently unfair when they're criticized, and now, apparently, it's unconstitutional. Now, according to this, to the hoe from Wasilla, what the founders intended with the First Amendment was that political candidates for the most powerful offices in the country and governors of states, that they would be free to say whatever they want without being criticized in the newspapers. That's what the First Amendment's about! The First Amendment was meant to ensure that powerful political officials would not be attacked in the papers. Is it even possible to imagine more breathtaking ignorance from someone seeking the vice presidency or holding a governor's office than Palin? The woman is out of her goddamn mind. I have never seen this kind of ignorance. Even George Bush would get this one right. So it's a violation of the First Amendment, according to Palin, for reporters to question elected officials, government officials. Jesus, God! Oh! It's just astonishing. And Larry Eagleburger, given a great choice. Go out there today, Larry, and correct what you said yesterday, or we take away your flying monkey pass and no more free weenies for you at the cocktail parties. Get out there and say that Sarah Palin is actually a good executive. You know, she's been a governor. God damn, Larry, what are you doing getting out there yesterday saying she's not qualified? Are you crazy? My God. And, you know that during that radio interview, and what kind of a freak sits there on WMAL? What is WMAL? Is that the most ignorant radio station staff in the history of radio station staffs? The guy interviewing her doesn't come back with, Sarah, that's ass backwards, Sarah! No, of course not. And you know why? Because he doesn't know either. He's a Republican. He's a conservative. They have no more of a working knowledge about the U.S. Constitution than, oh, I don't know, the man in the moon. How's that? Ask any of these Republicans. Stop them on the street and ask them to name two of the first 10 amendments to the U.S. Constitution and watch what happens. So there's Sarah Palin, the thriller from Wasilla, completely inverting the meaning of the First Amendment. Well, you know, when they accuse me of attacking Barack Obama, that's violation of my First Amendment rights. The press is violating my First Amendment rights. Oh, my God. And people support her. Oh, my God. All right. Have we got? Let's go back to phone calls for a while. Oh, by the way, we'll be taking some calls now. You want to get in here? 800-989-1480. Mark is calling from Hammond, Indiana, listening on the internet. Yes, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How's it going, Mike? Hey, first of all, thank you so much for being out there for us. I just got done witnessing something that was incredible.
Yeah.
And I had to share it with somebody. You were there.
All right. Okay, do it.
Barack Obama was in Highland, Indiana.
Uh-huh.
For a rally.
Yeah.
And it was at a relatively small park called Wicker Park. I've never seen that many people pack in such a small place.
Uh-huh.
But it was a beautiful thing. Everybody was there. Was having fun, everybody was just getting along. There was so much joy, no anger, and it was just a feeling of unity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I hear about Caribou Barbie doing like what you're talking about, saying that we're violating her First Amendment rights, when she wants to, with her husband, secede from the Union in Alaska, and forget about the fact that she doesn't even know what a vice president does.
Right.
That makes me sick.
Yeah, it does, and I understand what you're saying, Mark. It's just astonishing. Unbelievable, breathtaking, the ignorance of this woman. Mark, thanks. I'm sure it was a fun event. Most Obama rallies are, aren't they? I mean, you really come away. Hell, I get the feeling just watching them on television. You come away with a sense of, hey, something good's about to happen.
Better! college hockey mom and signed up for the PTA. I love those hockey moms. You know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull, lipstick.
Happy Halloween. Email here from Al. I went out this morning for a quick trip to Costco for some home goods, you know, ginkgo, biloba, cheese, the usual. I noticed two very old men in their late 80s trying to help each other read the back of a cereal box. I'm assuming they were comparing the nutritional numbers in the cereal to their personal health needs. They were dressed much too well to be two straight fellas, so I assumed they were a couple. And then I thought about if one of them had a serious medical problem where he was in a coronary care or intensive care unit, then this man's partner in life couldn't be at his bedside. I know from personal experience that the occasional doctor or nurse will look the other way so the sick person's significant other can sit at the bedside of his favorite human being and offer his care and his caring. But this situation should never be at the discretion or option or privy of law. Besides all that, this is a regressive un-American law that removes very certain civil rights of very specific Americans. The people behind this heinous law, this Prop 8, are not Americans. They're irrational, self-involved zealots trying to own the idea of marriage and force Americans to be as bigoted as they are and as stupid. A nice example of this hate below. And then what he includes, Al, what he includes is Brad Dacus, an official Prop 8, vote yes on Prop 8 spokesman. He is the president of something called the Pacific Justice Institute, which has nothing to do with justice. It's a religious right lawyers 501c3 organization that does everything in its power to crap on other people's individual and human rights. Here is what he said at a Sacramento Yes on 8 rally yesterday. Quote, "There was another time in history when people, well, when the bell tolled, and the question was whether or not they were going to hear it. The time was during Nazi Germany with Adolf Hitler. You see, he brought crowds of clergy together to assure them that he was going to look after the church. And one of the members, bold and courageous, Reverend Niemeyer, made his way to the front and said, 'Hitler, we're not concerned about the church. Jesus Christ will take care of the church. We are concerned about the soul of Germany.' Embarrassed and chagrined, his peers quickly shuffled him to the back of the crowd. And as they did, Adolf Hitler said, 'The soul of Germany, you can leave that to me.' And they did. And because they did, bombs did not only fall upon the nation of Germany, but also upon the church and their testimony to this very day. Let us not make that mistake, folks, again. Let us hear the bell. Vote yes on Prop 8. Oh, my God. Astonishing. So the desire to share in human rights in the state of California, including the right to form a legal contract between two people of the same sex, a legal contract that contains within it the stipulations for their marriage, this filthy son of a bitch, Brad Dacus, says no. And he invokes the name of Hitler against the people who are seeking human rights, civil rights, legal rights, whatever you want to call it, equality of justice under the law, seeking to not have their constitutional rights abridged. I you know, sometimes I really do have a hard time maintaining faith. What little shreds and shards I still have available. I really do. How does a nation like the United States produce scum like this guy, Brad Dacus,
who would invoke the name of Hitler and Nazism against people who are not Dick Cheney and George Bush and the rest of these right-wing thugs who are actually practicing National Socialism now. There's no question now. But against people who are seeking equality of justice under the law. That's all. Just equality of justice. Equal protection. You got it. I want it. Very simple. You don't have to give me anything. Just don't take anything away. God damn. You know, and the right-wing nutballs in this country say, well, the queers want special rights. And anybody with the sense God gave a stewed rhubarb stalk can answer, no, not really. What the queers want are equal rights, same as yours. Oh, but they can't have that. Why not? Well, because the Bible's, you know, and here we go again. It gets so tiring, doesn't it? All right, we'll be back after the break with your phone call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
I saw Lon Chaney walking with the Queen, doing the werewolves of London. I saw Lon Chaney Jr. walking with the Queen, doing the werewolves of London.
Down to Georgia, he was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what, I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too, and if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you. The boy said, my name's Johnny.
And trade, we've got to see trade as opportunity, not as a scary thing.
No!
Cause hell broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold. But if you lose, the devil gets your soul.
Too bad Charlie Daniels is such a right-wing freak. I like that song. I told you once, you son of a bitch, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Okay, but it's, I told you once, you son of a bitch, I'm the best that ever is.
Oh, okay.
Hey, honey, I was born here.
That's right, you were born here. Back your phone calls here on the Malloy program on Halloween. Michael is calling from the Bronx, listening on the Internet. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, buddy?
I'm right. Did you go trick-or-treating tonight?
No. But I was dressed up as an urban cowboy at an after-work karaoke.
Never mind. I'm sorry I asked. All right.
But you know something? You know, this Sarah Palin is driving me up the freaking wall. With the stuff that she says, the stuff that she does, and these right-wing jerks that still defend her, defend the psychopath saying that she's qualified. You know, I thought long and hard about this, Mike, and come to think of it, they're right. She is qualified, but not the way they want her to be.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the Constitution. She's at least 35 years old, a U.S. citizen, and a U.S. resident for at least 14 years. Yes, she is qualified. The issue is whether she's fit and worthy to be vice president, let alone president. And you and I both know that's definitely not the case. She flopped on the interviews. She doesn't give a rat's ass about the law, the Constitution, and even the rules of ethics, especially at the debates. It's no wonder she lost the last debate. You know, I only hope to God. And, well, you've seen The Price is Right, correct?
The Price is Right? Oh, one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, well, think of The Price is Right, what I'm about to say in closing, then you know where I'm going with this.
Okay.
I only hope to God that the morning after the election, Barack Obama and Joe Biden wake up to the tune of, what's that word, Hail to the Chief, and John McCain, and especially Sarah Palin, wake up to the sound of this. You get my drift?
I got it. I got it. Thanks, Michael. That's the noise they used to play when somebody would not put all the right prices up on the right prices right things.
I do remember. I'm not that young. I love it when callers bring their own sound effects.
I do, too. I
their own effects.
I think that's
it's
great.
It's impressive.
It
Urban
is.
Cowboy.
Urban Cowboy doing karaoke in the Bronx. Whoa. I would have liked to have seen that. Seth is calling from Austin, Texas, listening on Sirius. Hey, Seth.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call. Hey,
sure.
I wanted to compliment you on the eulogy you gave for Studs Terkel earlier. I think it epitomizes the thoughtfulness and inspired radio content that you provide on this show. And I just, you talking about him being on radio in Chicago made me wonder if there were any kind of archives available of Studs' radio show from back in the day.
Yeah, I think WBEZ in Chicago, which is the NPR affiliate or the public broadcast station, I think they have them. And also there is a radio historical archive in Chicago. Chicago is really the radio city of America, not New York. It was just Chicago where so many of the programs in the 20s and 30s and 40s originated. Eventually it switched to New York, as most things creative in this country did. But WBEZ FM in Chicago, it's my understanding, has an extensive library of Studs Terkel interviews when way back in the day when he had his radio program. The only way I can suggest that you find it, Seth, is to go to their website, WBEZ, and see if you can track it down that way. Does that help?
Yeah, that certainly does. Also, thank you for the book recommendations. I'm going to ride my bike down to the used bookstore tomorrow morning and pick up Working. I really want to check out his writings. And I just want to say, hey, keep up the good work on your radio show. And don't let this Sarah Palin distract you. I think at times it gets to be like we're all beating up on some little kid because that's all she really is. And there's meteor topics to be discussed within this election.
Well,
hey, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks, Seth. No doubt. I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right about wasting time on Sarah Palin. The problem with that is there's two problems. First of all, there are probably 40 million people in this country who are going to vote, essentially, for Sarah Palin. Secondly, there are hundreds of thousands of Republican neo-fascist right-wingers operatives who will try to steal the election any way possible. Voter suppression, tampering with the machines, losing machines, denying people of color the same number of voting machines in precincts where the population is the same as in white precincts, on and on and on. Given all that, anything that I can do to lacerate verbally Sarah Palin, metaphorically speaks to the NSA who listens every night. You know what I'm saying here, Jesus Christ. Anything I can do to metaphorically lacerate Sarah Palin, I will do. Not to fixate on her. I think it's astonishing. It needs to be pointed out that the Republican Party has put this woman forward as a vice presidential candidate, someone whose sole function, as listed in the Constitution, is to be ready to take over if for any reason the president becomes incapacitated or incapable of fulfilling his duties. So when you have someone who even inverts the First Amendment, who is the stupidest, most ignorant creature ever to be nominated like this, certainly in modern times, I don't know, maybe back in the 19th century, there's some real geeks, I have no idea. But in modern times, this woman makes Dan Quayle look like a genius. It's just unbelievable. So, with all due respect, Seth, no, I'll continue to focus. It's only another couple, 3 days. One more day. Monday. That's it. And then Sarah Palin can go back to shooting moose or skinning snowmobiles or whatever the hell she does to occupy herself in Wasilla. But I understand what you're saying. Anthony is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Man, thank you for taking my call.
I
appreciate talking to you.
My pleasure.
I really appreciate your show.
Well, thanks.
But I'm just like you. I'm really scared about this Sarah Palin and how close she is to the White House. I mean, it's unreal what her domestic policy would be. I mean, that would be just unreal. But you know what, Mike? I really called you because I was listening to Ted Stevens say that he wasn't convicted of anything.
Well, that's like Sarah Palin saying she was found totally innocent of all charges, ethical and otherwise. Republicans do that. They're liars, sneaks, scum.
And, you know, it really hit me today. I don't know where I heard it, but I heard that these right-wingers feel that no one has an authority on the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's if that's their premise, then, yeah, Ted Stevens and Sarah Palin are one and the same. They come from the same place.
Right.
And, you know, it just, I mean, it's just, like you said, they're liars. They're just all liars.
Yeah. When you have someone like Ted Stevens, who, you know, has been in Alaska politics, I think, since before Alaska was a state, I think it's great. Somebody 84 or 86 is as active and spry and able to con and lie and cheat and steal like he is. I think that's great, man. You know, some people 84 or 86 years old have a hard time finding the depends. And here, here old Ted Stevens is able to carry off his scams and steal his money and do all those nasty-ass things, that the 7 felony counts. I mean, that ain't beanbag. Now, he probably is not going to go to prison. I mean, who wants to send an 84-year-old man to prison for fraud, lying, cheating, stealing, theft, violating his oath of office, and urinating all over the American flag? Kathy's raising her hand. She'd like to send him to prison. He's too old to go to prison. But you're right, man. Republicans do this all the time. And the sad part is Democrats let them get away with it.
If I were to give up and wave a white flag of surrender against some of the political shots that we've taken, I'm not doing this for naught. No, we're gonna progress. We're gonna keep going forward.
Time before the hour. Excuse me. Thanks to our engineer, Ian Huff, who also answered your calls. By the way, tune in Sunday morning to listen to Ian's program at KPHX. You can stream it live. Ian, open your mic for a second. I know you all are having a time change out there, I think. I know that Phoenix does not participate in daylight savings time. Why the hell not?
Well, it's hot enough here as it is during the summer. We don't need any more daylight.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well,
yeah, so same time, 8 o'clock, the Cutting Edge, Shelley and Anita Drobny show. Their show will be changing times because they're on the network clock. My show is not on the network clock yet. So Shelley and Anita Drobny and the Cutting Edge will be at 10 a.m. Sunday morning, Phoenix time. My show, Unreported News, at 8.
8 a.m., which would be...
That'll be
11 a.m. here.
10.
In, here
10.
In the
no, it goes to 2 hours. 2 hours difference with the time change.
You people are crazy.
It sucks,
dude.
I know.
Really
yes.
Crazy. All right. So 10 o'clock Sunday morning, for those of us who live in the East, tune in. Listen to Ian's program. I have yet to hear him, but I'm going to take, excuse me, we're going to go back up the North Georgia Mountains over the weekend because it's so beautiful up there now, and we're going to take a computer along, so that'll freak him out. We'll be listening. Ruth is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Oh, wait, hey, Ruth?
Yeah.
Hold on a minute. I didn't finish giving all the credits. Will you bring that up for me? Ruth, just hold on a second. There we go. Ian Huff, who... engineered and answer your calls. Ben Birch is our podcast manager and technical director. You try that. Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg, economic correspondent. And the ethical advisors for this program are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. The executive producer is Catherine Bay. Now back to Ruth. Ruth is calling from Los Angeles. Thanks, Ruth.
Hi. First-time caller, but long-time listener. You know, your screener told me that you don't like praise too much, and I just want you to know that that violates my First Amendment right.
All right, Sarah. I
understand.
I appreciate the fact that you listen, the fact that you called me, and you like the
listen,
program.
Listen, I just wanted to tell you quickly. I'm going to talk fast because I want to get this in. Last week when you talked about the AP story about Sarah Palin, construing the bidding in such a way that her crony got the Alaska pipeline deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Right after that, I go and I put in Sarah Palin Alaskan pipeline on the New York Times website. Sorry, your search returned no result. Went to the Washington Post, no result. Called CNN, well, they haven't covered it. Last time they covered something like that was in May. I was just furious. So fast forward. My brother told me last night that Fox News said that, Obama was related somehow to a book dedicated to Sirhan Sirhan.
Oh, no. God.
I swear to God on a Bible.
Oh, my God.
Okay, Fox News. But wait, that's bad enough. That is bad enough.
Oh.
But just to make the point that you have trained me with, I went and Googled that because I wanted to find out what the hell it was. 27,000 entries. May God strike me dead. And then after I read, you know, the garbage for about, you know, five minutes and got an airline's, you know, disposal container.
Yeah.
Then I thought, well, now I'm going to go contribute to Carol Dennett. I spent 40 minutes trying to find her on the internet. So I'm just talking about...
You know, it's Charlotte Dennett.
Charlotte Dennett. Okay, well,
Charlotte.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I got it.
Right,
the bottom line is our whole, you know, media system, internet system, everything is just totally subverted.
It is. Have you heard the latest? Did you know that Barack Obama eats Christian babies?
Oh, they must be from the abortion clinics.
I mean, the stuff leveled against him. You know, if any one of the charges leveled against him were true, I mean, how could the people of Illinois and all the people he's worked with in the Senate, all the people? I mean, it's just outrageous what the McCain campaign is. It's nothing but a drive-by shooting. That's all the McCain-Palin campaign is. You know, they're driving down the street. It's like those old movies back in the 30s. They're driving down the street. They got their Tommy guns sticking out the windows of the car.
They're
in an old car, right, with a running board on it. And they're just opening fire as they go by the candy store. I mean, that's all they're doing. This is obscene. The McCain campaign is nothing more nor less than an obscenity. It's just unbelievable. Hey, Ruth, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, I'm glad you checked in. You have a nice evening. We got time for Diane? Yeah, we always got time for Diane. Hi, Diane.
Hi.
Calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan. How are you?
I'm fine. I just wanted to tell you really quick. I know you got to go. Friday night, doing my favorite thing, listening to Mike Malloy, opened my newspaper, and Republicans misled voters by using a double slaying as an example of early release program failures, which the Democrats were for. And it turns out that this was not an early release. It was politicized. The family was lied to. The public was lied to. Prison officials were lied to. They did this all for political gain against the Democrat who is running for a House seat today. They did it all today. Used the double murder to tie it to the to the Democrat.
It's incredible.
Grampus Press or M Live. I just had to call you.
Well, thanks. Hey, listen, call me next week, Diane, when we got time to talk. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Oh, and Ruth, if you're still listening, let me tell you how to find that Sarah Palin pipeline story. Google, just go to tvnewslies.org. tvnewslies.org. It'll be there for you. I'll see you Monday. Have a safe weekend, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. And have a great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are.
This is the end, my only friend, the end of our dilemma.
Or Jim Morrison, wherever you are.
The end of